and welcome to kosherclasses.org teleconference. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. I'm here in our Baltimore offices together with Reb Zev Steen, who's our producer, and making sure everything runs smoothly. This is our monthly teleconference that's held the last Wednesday of each month at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, and we're very glad that you joined us today. Today I have we're going to have a discussion with Rabbi Beyer. Those of you who have joined us in the past know Rabbi Beyer, and of Slurpee fame and candy discussions that we've had in the past. And today we're going to discuss other issues having to do with the Jewish year, Shemitah issues, sabbatical issues, and so on. So welcome, Rabbi Beyer. How are you?
Thank you, Rabbi Goldberg. Good to be here.
Okay, we're coming up to Rosh Hashanah, the new year next week. Can't believe it.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Wasn't it just 5-7-6-7, you know, going into 5-7-6-8?
That's where, right.
Time flies. And so this year is a very special year. This past year has been what we call Shemitah. Now, how do you translate that, Rabbi Beyer? Sabbatical year?
Sabbatical year, yeah.
That sounds like we're taking off this year, isn't that?
Yeah.
Once every
no one told
7
me.
Years. What?
No one told me that.
That's true. Well, we work here hard all year about on kosher certifications. But the sabbatical year is for those farmers, of course, living in the land of Israel. And once every 7 years, they are commanded not to work the land.
Right.
Right. That's it's in the Torah. It's in the Bible. And nowadays, it's actually not commanded on the level of a Torah commandment, but a rabbinic continuation of the Torah commandment. And so we went through this whole year of Shemitah. We come to the end now, and part of the end of the Shemitah year, besides leaving the land lie fallow for that year, there is also a commandment to let the loans sort of lie fallow, right? Let the loans that you lend money to somebody, and during this year, we're supposed to let those loans go, forgive the loans.
Right.
Right, and that happens at the end of the year, at the very last second of this Jewish year, which is 5-7-6-8. The very last second will be where's my calendar, Rabbi Beyer? Will be next Monday night.
Oh, right.
At what time? Where's our calendar expert, Rabbi Heber, when we need him?
Yeah.
You know, a minute before sundown.
Right.
Next week, any loans that anybody might have, this applies even outside the land of Israel. Zev says candlelighting is 6:34 in Baltimore, right?
Right.
Next week, so at that time, the loans will become non-existent, will be forgiven. The person that is commanded to forgive the loans, if somebody comes to him to pay back after that time, next year, next Jewish year, then we're commanded to tell the person that we have already forgiven the loan and he doesn't owe it.
Now, I like that law.
Okay, I won't ask you if you're one of the lenders or the borrowers. I won't put you on the spot.
Yeah.
But the rabbi saw that because this law is in effect, people were hesitating to lend money, and because they didn't want to lose their loans, it was costly, and it's a benefit for the poor people, of course, and the people that borrow. But it was also becoming difficult and causing loans to be refused. Like there was a credit crunch, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah.
Similar to what's going on.
Time, you know, what goes right. around comes around.
Right. We had an introduction to the credit crunch when we learned the Talmud. People aren't lending money.
Yeah.
Things can't get done.
Right.
Poor people don't have. They can't buy food for the holidays and for Shabbos and. And therefore, the rabbis instituted a bailout. No, they instituted a way where through through the means of what we call prusable, a person would be able to have his loans still stay in force after the new year. And what the idea of a prusable is, it's an Aramaic word and difficult to translate, but the idea is that a person who is a lender, he goes to a Beth Din, a Beis Din, a group of three knowledgeable people, and he says to them, I would like that my loans continue to be in force next year, and therefore I transfer my loans to the Beis Din that they should allow me to continue to collect my loans next year. So in a sense, it's not you who are collecting, but rather it's this group of three people, the Beth Din, who are giving you permission to collect. And that's how it works technically. And
there's
we have
a form you need to fill out, right?
Yeah, it was a form that you fill out in front of this group. They should be knowledgeable people. They should know what it is and understand what they're doing. They shouldn't think that it's a group of three people gathered for some other purpose, and they should understand the basics behind it.
Well,
and
would that be like a bezin that would serve the certain purposes, like for Hataras Nadarim, that kind of a level
releasing
of bezin?
Releasing one of his vows, yes. But in that case, they'd have to know how to release one of his vows, which is also done on the day before Rosh Hashanah. And in this case, they have to understand a little bit of what they're doing. They shouldn't think this is releasing vows. They should understand this is taking over the loan in a sense. And that's it. You fill out this form. You get the rabbis or people in front of you to sign it, and then you are permitted to collect your loans the next year. And we have such a form online on the Star K website, star-k.org, on the homepage. There's a little button there that says Prusable. And if you go there, you'll be able to print it out and fill it out in front of your three people.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Now, if someone is not aware if he's made any loans, does he need to fill out a Prusable also?
Well, if he's not aware of any loans, then he doesn't need to fill out
a form.
Sometimes a person may not be aware. I'll give you an example. Yeah. Let's say a doctor has patients and he charges them, and they owe him money. Now, there's no loan over here. He provided a service for them. But when he bills them, then it becomes a sort of loan that they now owe him money. And if he wants to collect those loans next year, meaning after Rosh Hashanah, then he has to fill out the Prusable form in order to be able to collect. So I think it's advisable for almost any person to fill out a Prusable, because you never know. You don't really even remember sometimes that you lent somebody money. It happened maybe, it could be any time during this past 7 years that you lent somebody money. That's a long time. And they didn't pay you back, and they come to you next year and they say, here's the $500 you lent me. You say, well, I completely forgot about it. But you know what? It's already past Shemitah, and the loan is forgiven. Right. So if you want to avoid that, it would be best. I think any person would, it only takes a few minutes, would be worthwhile to fill it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if anybody has any questions, we like to take questions here. The way you can ask a question is if you hit 1-1 on your keypad, the number 1 and then 1 again, and we'll see over here a little hand raised, and we can recognize your question. And we do enjoy to take your questions. Okay, so that's really, in a nutshell, that is the Prusable form that we do have available. Now, again, getting back to the regular laws of Shemitah, which are that the farmers in Israel let their land lie fallow for one entire year. You know, there are different interpretations of why they needed to do that. What's the purpose of such a law? You know, is it to help the land so that the land can be more productive the next years? That there is one opinion like that, but that's a really minority opinion.
Well, that, in the non-Jewish world, in the agricultural world, they'll do that.
They will cycle the
field so they don't
Right. So there is a minority opinion that that's the reason that's done over here, but it's really a minority. Most of the explanations focus on the people, on the farmers themselves, and on the rest of the country who's eating that fruit, that it shows a certain emunah, a certain trust in God, that we don't work for a whole year. right? In the olden days, everything was agricultural. It was based, and it's just like every week we have a sort of sabbatical Shabbos. Is the same
mm-hmm.
idea that we don't work for that particular day, and we show our trust in Hashem and God that we're going to be able to make ends meet nonetheless. So that's the most common explanation of Shemitah. So the Shemitah applies both to fruits and to vegetables, to both. Now there is a little bit of a difference, and let's not go into too much detail, but a little bit of explanation. So the Shemitah year began last Rosh Hashanah, last September, and ends this next week, when Monday night at whatever time we said.
Right.
So the vegetables that started growing during that year are forbidden to be eaten. They have a rule of Shemitah, and we don't eat those vegetables. Now, the vegetables that start growing beginning next, Thursday, right, if you plant and start to grow beginning after Rosh Hashanah, those vegetables are permitted. The vegetables that are grown in Israel would be permitted. And the thing is, though, that you don't grow a vegetable and get it to market in 3 days. It takes some time.
Right.
So if you go out and buy Israeli produce, let's say you walk into your local supermarket, your Giant or your Shoppers or Walbams or wherever you may happen to be, Safeway, and you buy Israeli produce like tomatoes and cucumbers right after Rosh Hashanah, right? So when is that going to be from?
So from October the 2nd.
So if you buy it right after Rosh Hashanah, that's going to be from last year.
Oh, you're asking, right, that'll
right,
be
from the
previous year, correct.
Right, and that's going to be a problem. If you buy it a little bit later, maybe, I don't know, a month or a month and a half, we have charts on it, right? That's going to be from the next year.
In the latest Kashrus currents, I believe there's a whole chart on, right?
Right, in our widely disseminated publication, the Kashrus Currents,
right.
We have a chart, a whole page.
Which is available online also, I assume.
It's going to be available online. This
right.
This Kashrus Currents is just coming out today. Just today.
Uh-huh.
It's coming out in many newspapers.
The Shemitah edition.
The Shemitah edition of the Kashrus Currents has a whole page of a list of fruits and vegetables and exactly when they become permitted, because every vegetable has a different cycle, and every fruit is different. So we have we have an entire list of what's what there. But so that's with the vegetables. So when you buy the vegetables, give it some time, a month or two, then the vegetables will be not Shemitah anymore. But what will they be? They'll be regular Israeli produce,
which will require brings up other issues.
Other issues.
Truma,
Maaser, tithing. Yeah, the tithing. But those will be permitted to be eaten as long as you take the tithing. It is a little complicated. Some people, for that reason, just stay away from Israeli produce unless it has a certification. And that may be the best route to take, for most people, just to avoid it. But sometimes you don't even realize until you see the little sticker on the tomato when you bring it home.
I'm just looking at the list now, Rabbi Goldberg. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. Some of the produce actually will not be available, not just this year, but really until the following year, until
70. That's the key point here that sometimes we miss, that the Shemitah year, although technically it's 5-7-6-8, which is this year, it lasts a long time into 5-7-6-9 because the fruits that are available this year really budded during the Shemitah cycle. The fruits that will be available from, this coming September through, June, July, whenever, were really started growing during the Shemitah year. And therefore, they will be considered Shemitah produce almost this entire Jewish year. So we also have the list, that's what you're saying, that you have a list of when things last.
So,
something
like carob, which a lot of people use on Tu B'Shvat,
right,
is not available really until after next Rosh Hashanah.
Carob.
The 20th of Tishrei, 5770. We
Wow, yeah, that is that's a whole year and almost a month from now.
Right. And wow. The oranges are way down, and oranges are even later, and oranges and olive oil and grapefruit from Israel, all that would be.
Because these fruits spend a lot of time on the tree. They don't just necessarily not even one season.
Right.
It'll be even more than one season they stay on the tree, and then then you pick them. So a person needs to keep in mind that the fruits, especially the Shemitah, continues into the next year. Again, I just want to mention again, we're here in Baltimore for the teleconference brought to you by kosherclasses.org. And my name is Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. I'm here with Rabbi Baruch Beyer talking about the Jewish New Year and Shemitah. If anybody has any questions, again, hit 1-1 on the keypad, and we would love to take questions. And let's continue, Rabbi Beyer. Let's talk about the esrogim, the citrons, that will be used this year for the Sukkot holiday.
So I guess all the esrogim are for free this year? Is that how it works?
Well,
take them for free, right?
Sort of for free.
Sort of, you know, for free. It's a good year for Sukkot.
It's sort of for free. The reason that they're sort of for free is that these esrogim, the ones that come from the land of Israel, which the majority do, have the kedusha of Shemitah on them. They have the holiness of the year of Shemitah. And you're not allowed to do business with such produce. So technically speaking, you couldn't charge. Mm-hmm. Now, we know, we're saying that tongue-in-cheek, that it's free, because they're not really free.
Right.
So it would not be much incentive. How do we do it so that there could be a sale of esrogim of the citrons that we use on the...
Right,
on
we
the
want to put the esrog dealers out of business.
Right. So one way that has been instituted is through the Otzer Beis Din. And actually there's a whole article, again, in the Kashrus Currents that just came out about explanation about what this is. But in a nutshell, it means that the price that you pay is not for the esrog. It really is free. You're paying for the work that was involved in getting the esrog to market. Because even if the fruit is free, but there are shipping costs and there are picking costs, and people have to be paid for their effort, even if you're not paying for the fruit itself. And therefore, the payment is really for that.
So the price of the esrog is really for the, you're paying
it's
for
really,
the workers,
it's really
as opposed to the fruit this time around.
You're paying for the work, right. Now, there are some, I don't think we have this in America, but in Israel, I read that some, in order to avoid any appearance of, like, business, what they're doing is they're just selling in closed boxes. Not like
mm-hmm.
normally where you go and you pick out a nice, beautiful fruit with a nice pitim or a stem on it, and no blemishes. No, you just go and you pick out, just go and pick up your esrog in a box.
Mm-hmm.
Takes the fun out of it, sort of, but that's what they're doing to avoid any appearance of doing business.
You know, that's the Shemitah year for you. You know, you have to have trust.
Right? You have to have trust that you're getting a nice...
God's going to give you a good esrog.
That's right. You know, some people... They daven, they pray for the esrog beginning in the previous Tu Bishvat. So it's about, it's almost 1-6 months earlier is an auspicious time to pray for a good esrog, because that's when the fruits start to bud on the tree. And, you got to pray in advance. So if it's true by the esrog, it's certainly true by other things too.
It's interesting. I was looking at the conscious currents that we were mentioning. Rabbi Rosen has a nice article in this issue also about the
Otzer Beis Din. Nice picture, too. Did you see the picture of Rabbi Rosen?
Very nice picture of Rabbi Rosen.
With the fruit picking the grapes over
definitely
there?
Definitely one of the more photogenic rabbis here in the office. But there is a mention that the Otzer Beis Din is actually, as what you mentioned, they want to avoid the impression of doing business. So the Otzer Beis Din is not in a normal store setting. The Otzer Beis Din, at least for fruits and vegetables, apparently is operated out of a person's home, at least in the Geula neighborhood in Jerusalem.
Uh-huh. I see. Okay. All right. I read that. That's true. I don't know if that's true for every.
I don't know if that's true for every,
but some of them do work like that. Yeah. Another way of getting out of this problem of buying the srog and the citrons from Israel is actually just to purchase it from another place, like Morocco has exports a srogim.
Right.
And not only that, but even California exports a srogim. And I'll tell you a little story, Rabbi Bayer. I heard actually this past Shabbos that there is an esrog grower in Israel, and those that grow and sell the esrogim, they use this as a main source of their livelihood. It's not only during this time that you need to work. Really, it's all year. They work on the groves and they attend to them and so on. And this year, they had to let them lie fallow and not work on them. Almost no work is allowed except really to keep it from deteriorating, but no real effort is really put into keeping them up. And this fellow in Israel, he didn't have a good crop in Israel, and the esrogim, anyway, he doesn't really get much for them because he's only being paid for his effort and so on and so forth. And he had a crop. He bought a orchard in California. And all the years, it didn't really do too much for him because it wasn't the right climate. It was the frost, and even a couple of days of frost would kill the srogim. You hear sometimes about the oranges in Florida.
Right.
But this year, of all years, he got about 10 times more, about 20,000 srogim.
Really?
Because apparently it was warmer. I mean, it was warmer there.
Global warming.
Wherever he has his grove. It was warmer, and therefore they didn't get destroyed.
That's
and he came out with 20,000 esrogim from California.
That's a great story.
Yeah. So we see in that the blessing that God gives that's promised to a person who keeps the sabbatical year. So he has now 20,000 esrogim from California. So I'm guessing that's going to be more popular this Sukkot holiday to be able to use the esrogim from California, from Morocco, and that avoids really any question of using a
good
from
made in the USA.
Made in the USA. Right, grown in the USA, made in the USA, and that's a possibility if people want to look into that.
Okay,
so let's move on to another topic, which has to do with, not with the Shemitah anymore, but does have to do with the Sukkot holiday, and that is the Schachmetz. We have the little huts that we put up on Sukkos, and the huts are covered with a material that has two conditions. Number one, it has to grow from the ground, and number two, it has to be something that cannot become tameh, that cannot become ritually impure.
Right.
So normally what they used to use when I was a kid, probably when you were a kid, way back in the Civil War days.
Yeah.
What did we use then? We used bamboo pieces, right?
Well, we used bamboo, and before that, we used to actually go and cut pine branches off trees.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And then you have the pine. Dean says also he used to use the pine. Didn't pine needles come into your soup?
Flavor your soup, exactly. A little pine-flavored soup.
I see.
Yeah. But, it was nice. It did look nice, though.
Okay. Well, I lived in California for a couple of years, and we used to use the palm fronds.
I've heard about that from people in California as well.
Those are the date palms have these big leaves that come out of them.
Right.
They're very beautiful on the tree, and then you cut them off. Actually, what happened was the city did our work for us.
Right.
Because the city would go and they would trim their palms. The palms are everywhere, and they have to trim them. And then we would go. We asked the city if we could collect them because they would have to otherwise dispose of them. And we went and we collected them. They're very heavy. The big ones. They could weigh 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Anyway, we would use those. They were very nice to put up on the sukkah.
Yeah, little tropical sukkahs.
It never rains in California. It never rains on sukkahs.
Nice.
It doesn't rain. At least Northern California, where I was in San Jose.
Yeah.
It doesn't rain.
That's nice.
Not like New York or East Coast, where you always have to worry maybe it's going to rain and you won't get a chance to sit in the sukkah.
Think about rain. Talk about snow sometimes. I remember that.
But in California, it does,
yeah.
not, it does not. It's beautiful. Yeah. It has a similar weather.
Almost like Israel.
Almost like Israel.
Not quite.
So we have these, but nowadays it became popular to use the schach mats.
Right.
The schach mats are slices of bamboo or some other material which it grows from the ground and is not itself mekabel tuma, cannot become ritually impure, and they're tied together somehow, and they roll up, and you easily store them, and then you unroll them on top of your sukkah, and that everybody likes them. They're convenient, they're not that expensive,
right.
They store nicely, and they're very, very extremely popular, and you can get them at any Judaica store.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, they do need to be certified, because sometimes the string that they use to hold them together could be a problem. The string could be something that could be ritually impure, like a regular string could accept ritual impurity, and they cannot be made with something like that.
Yeah, I know that from personal experience. Actually, I have several mats that have that problem.
And
that they were made with string.
Uh-huh. So you don't use them anymore.
Right.
Uh-huh. I see. Okay. And we have Starcase certified mats use monofilament cord, which is
fishing wire.
Which is right. I got today just an email just today this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please explain to me what the
monofilament
cord holding the schach together is made from?
Yeah.
And the answer is it's plastic, like
plastic.
Fishing string.
That's basically what it is.
It's fishing string.
Yeah.
And that is not mekabel tuma. It can't become ritually impure, that plastic. And therefore, we use it as the holder, the thing that holds together the little bamboo slats.
Right, right.
Right? So it actually is very, very useful. It lasts a long time, and people like them. Now, there is a technical point that you'd want to know if you buy our certified mats, which are available, I think you can look online and get them,
mm-hmm.
or in the Judaica stores. But there is one point that you'd want to remember, and this is a technical point. We're not going to go into the why of it, but what you have to do is when you put up these mats, put them perpendicular to the beams of wood that they're going to rest on.
Right.
Not parallel, but perpendicular.
You mean the way that the actual bamboo
mm-hmm.
runs? Should be running perpendicular.
They should be running perpendicular, right? The way that the when you lay out the
weave
mat,
of the bamboo has to be running perpendicular to the the things, whatever, cross beams.
Cross beams that are going to hold them. Yes.
Right.
When
right,
you're using
right.
this monofilament, there's a technical reason for that. And another thing that you want to make sure is that you don't tie it down with something. You don't want them to blow off in the wind, so you're going to have to do something to keep them from blowing off. So you don't want to tie them down
a good idea.
With a string that itself is mekabel tuma.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have the same problem. So one thing that is very easily done is you put like some 2x4s on top of the mats. To hold it down.
Not too many of them, just maybe one or
not
two.
Not too many, not like you cover your whole circle
right.
with 2x4s, because then
you
there's no
have
point
a roof.
To the mats.
Right.
Then you won't have a roof and there's no point to the mats. Just a couple that are heavy enough to keep the mats from blowing off in the wind. And that can
right.
be a problem, I can tell you from experience.
I as well.
It can be very windy in during the circus season. I mean, wasn't there a hurricane?
Was
Hurricane Isabel on sukkahs?
I know that because my sukkah was blown down.
So what Isabel was on sukkahs?
It was around sukkah time, yes.
Was
it a hurricane or very strong winds or something, but I remember
having
my sukkah
right.
was halfway down, yeah.
Well, if your sukkah is blown down, then you can't sit in it to fulfill the mitzvah, Rabbi Bar. So you got to rebuild it.
We may do.
Right. So...
Yeah.
So people who buy the mats, this is one type available with the fishing string. There are other types that other certifications are arranging that are held together with like a hemp string. which is also hemp. Yeah, it grows from the ground. It doesn't. It's not makabaltum. It doesn't accept ritual impurity, and it holds it together. And you know, those are good as well. And you know, so lots of different ways to do it. All right. If there are any questions about this or anything else, we can take a couple of questions before we have to go. But I want to thank you for joining us. This class is held once a month on the last Wednesday of each month. Next class will be October 29th.
Okay.
At 12 noon at the same numbers. Either through the telephone or you could Skype if you are very computer savvy and know how to do that. And we look forward to you joining us at that time. These classes are archived, so if you have any of your friends want to listen, you can find them at kosherclasses.org, kosherclasses.org, and you can find this class will be there probably later today, she would say, Zev, okay? As soon as Zev can clean off his desk from everything else that he does, he'll put it up there. And the other classes are archived, and we want to thank you again for joining us. Have a very good day and a good new year. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.